This is your not politically correct radio show. We don't sugarcoat. We don't hide the truth. We don't cry wolf. Nikki Love, our resident dating coach, is standing by. Nikki, how you doing?
I'm doing very good, Robert. How are you?
Great. Great to hear from you. So I was browsing through the internet this week, and I'm coming across an article. It's kind of interesting. I wanted to get your opinion on it. It says six experts share the worst piece of relationship advice they've ever heard. Now, you know, to me, it sounds like a slick way to get more money out of that client. You'll see what I mean in a minute. So the first thing they said was, if you're fighting, your relationship is in trouble. It says that's the bad advice. They're saying it's not that you fight, but how you fight that determines the health and happiness of a relationship. What do you think? You think people should fight when they're in a relationship?
I mean, I think it's inevitable. I think you're definitely going to fight. I think choosing the right battles and when. If I'm in a relationship, I'm not going to fight before I go to bed. I think nighttime's the worst time to discuss things. You know, you want to go to bed on a have some peaceful dreams.
Well, what's there to fight about? I mean, is the eggs are scrambled, right, and the man's bringing home the bacon. What's the big deal?
I mean, there's many things. You have two different hearts, two different minds, two different souls coming together. So just finding that balance to be with one another. So anything can just agitate, you know.
Okay. So now they're saying another one that they're saying is bad advice. They're saying cyber snooping can save you from choosing the wrong partner. And they're saying if someone gives you this advice, you should take a quality look at that person's relationship before you follow in their footsteps. So basically, they're trying to say here that you shouldn't be, like, you know, checking emails or checking text messages or anything like that. Like, to me, that's just crazy. Like, if it's right there, you leave your phone open, I'm going to look through it. I mean, if you texting Tyrone on a slick, like, why can't I say something about that? Like, why shouldn't I know that?
I mean, I kind of agree, but then the other to throw out, you know, you don't trust. You know, that's my privacy, my space, you're invading it. And then it's just like a going through, you know, going into a circle. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, just being cautious and careful and just, you know, just depends on how committed you are and going from there. And, you know, and if that person does it to you, I mean, you go through, you know, if I was to go through your phone, Robert, you know, I have to be willing to let you go through mine. So it has to be kind of even, I feel like.
So when you say be cautious and careful, you mean like delete all the text messages and emails before you leave your phone?
No. No, okay. I wouldn't take it that far.
Okay, so we the third piece of advice we got here is it says in order for a relationship to work, it has to be magic right from the start. And they're saying like, okay, let's say you've been you've been dating around and you've been working in the office and it says others, you know, sit next to the same person at the office for years and still nothing until one day they do. So, you know, the way that sounds to me is you've been sitting in the office for years, nobody really wants to date you, and now Poindexter from the IT department is kind of looking kind of good. Like, what do you think?
I mean, I think the only way that IT guy would be looking kind of good to me is if we had a great friendship and I was getting super, super comfortable with him to where I felt like I could tell him anything and then he just started, you know, to look like Superman. You know, that's the only way.
I think it's Poindexter's IRA that's going to be looking good. The fact that he ain't been dating over the last 15 years, he's been saving up all that money.
Let's see what his skills are, you know, behind that desk.
Okay. So, but I just don't understand that. I can't move on to the next one. I don't understand, like, if he didn't look good in the beginning, if he didn't look good from the start, how does he, what's going to change? I mean, don't they say that a female knows within the first 30 seconds if she's attracted to a man? What's going to change?
Well, I think, you know, you got females that just go for, like, the bad boys or the tall, handsome, tall, dark athletes that seem all great, but then their downfall is maybe they don't have that passion or that commitment. Then you have this friend. He's attractive. he's not as hot as that basketball player that's about to make a lot of money or that's popular. But, you know, maybe one day you share that kiss and that passion all of a sudden just blooms and you're like, oh, wow. So
I'll tell you what makes you hot. I got a blazer made out of $100 bills. I look so hot in that blazer.
I'm sure you do.
I mean, I was hot when I put that blazer on. I'm just saying, like, you know, to me, it's weird. It's like the overlooked guy, and it kind of makes me think about, oh, the clock is ticking. Let me hurry up and make something happen real quick. I mean, is that fair? And you mentioned the friend too. You mentioned the female friend too. Like, I mean, that's another thing. Like, how does the guy come out of the friend zone? Is that even possible? Like, tell our callers. We want to know.
Extremely hard.
You're listening right now. You're in the friend zone. As a matter of fact, if you're listening right now and you're in the friend zone, we want to hear from you. Give us a call down here at the station, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Nikki, tell us how we get out the friend zone.
Well, Robert, you're in my friend zone. How do you come out of it?
Well, I don't know if that's the direction we're going in right now. Like, our callers want to know. Because, you know, I'm just Poindexter in the IT department, so I'm going to get out by building up my IRA and filling up my retirement fund, and then hopefully a woman can come along and she can just, you know, just clear me out. I'll be happy for a little while. But our callers want to know, how do they get out the friend zone? Let's say that they don't have, you know, money. They don't have, like, charm or whatever the case may be, but they've got a girl that they really like, that they really want to be with. What do they do?
Good communication skills.
Listening. Being a great listener. Wow, that's amazing. Well, speaking of listening, that's an excellent segue. We're actually going to listen. We've got a caller on the line right now. Her name is D.F. Jackson. She's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. She's actually an internet mogul. And when we come back from this break, we're going to actually hear her story, how she got to where she is, and the advice that she has to offer our callers from a business standpoint. Remember, that number is 888-627-6008. We'll be right back after this break. Robert Bridges, Intuition 101 show with my co-host, Nikki Love. We're here just having a friendly debate. We were talking about getting out of the friend zone. But the next thing I saw that they said is bad advice, and I definitely don't agree with this. It says honesty is not always the best policy. Like, basically, they're saying there's a difference between telling an important truth your partner needs to know and making insensitive remarks that are technically truthful, but will only hurt them. So, I mean, what do you think about that? You think it should be white lies, or what do you think?
I mean, I think being honest is always a great, but choosing your words wisely, and you know, just really thinking about how it's going to come across to that other person and how they're going to take it and think about it. I mean, men and women think totally different, so... Yeah, I would choose wisely in what I say and how I say it. But I definitely think honesty, you know, sets you free. You know, everything's going to surface regardless. So just being who you are and, you know, I really don't believe in really bringing too much of the past, going into, like, great details, but, you know, saying, like, a little bit, but the past is pretty much in the past. So they don't need to know everything.
So, but what about white lies? Like, you're sitting there and, I don't know, your partner asks you, what did you think about that Lifetime movie or something? And you really want to say that it was awful, but you know it's their favorite movie, so you don't want to hurt their feelings. What about that? I mean, doesn't that create a culture of deception?
I don't agree. No, definitely not. I mean, that's just neither here or there. That's just like fill in the blanks, like gray area. That don't even matter. Little things like that, it's not even worth talking about later.
Okay. Well, this one right here is definitely kind of blowing me away. It says you're supposed to meet one another's needs. Now that one right there, I definitely don't see how that could be a bad piece of advice, because when you're in a relationship, it's kind of like it's 50-50. Like we Bonnie and Clyde, like you got me this time, I got you that next time. You know, I don't get that. Like, but they're saying, you know, you could be needy or you could become needy on each other. Like, help me understand that.
I mean, the way I look at it is, if I fill up your gas tank, I don't want to be just left on empty. I need loving, too. So I think no matter what you do, one thing I've always followed is, if I'm going to say yes to you, am I saying yes to myself or am I really saying no to myself? If I'm saying no to myself, then I need to check myself real quick. I need to be able to say yes to you and yes to myself, because I got to keep me going, you know, on a full gas tank, because I can't tell nobody but myself. So that's called self-love.
Right. That's cool. You know, I definitely agree with that. And I appreciate your comments, Nikki Love. We want to keep you on. But right now we're going to transition. We've got a guest on the line. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. Like I told you, you know, she's a marketing guru. She actually went to Georgia Southern University. She holds a degree in criminal justice. And for the past 15 years, she's been writing. She's actually wrote a novel. I'm going to let y'all know a little bit more about that. Man, she's just what I would consider a renaissance woman. She's going against the curve. Her name is C.F. Jackson. C.F., welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for a great introduction. I appreciate it. Looking forward to speaking with you and your co-host and your audience. Thank you for having me.
So, C.F., we see you the CEO of iDefine TV. How did you get involved in that?
Pretty much.
Well, first off, what is iDefine TV? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Pretty much, iDefine TV is pretty much it. We focus on syndicating and distributing content for entrepreneurs, small business owners, anybody from independent filmmakers, independent music artists, to stream their content to a national and international TV audience utilizing new technology, which are the streaming media players. So if you're familiar with Apple TV or Roku or anything like the Amazon Fire Stick, then that is what we are broadcasting. Mainly we focus on Roku because they're the leader of this technology. So we're helping those who wants to reach a national and international audience of individuals watch television every single day, because we all watch television.
Okay, now I've heard about this technology, you know, and I've heard that, you know, this is a game changer. Like, this is really changing the way information, the way television, education, entertainment is being broadcast. I mean, tell me, why is this a game changer? Like, what's so new or cutting edge about this technology that overshadows what we've had in the past?
It's a big question, Robert. Really, it's a game changer because for years, you think about it, you have the mainstream was considered the ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and the others. They were considered the ones who determined what's going to be syndicated, what's going to be broadcast to the viewing audience. But now with such the technology that they're no longer considered mainstream anymore. If you think about Netflix has really, with Roku creating the actual platform and being the actual leader in it, then Netflix taking and running away with you. Think about it, a lot of the actresses and actors are now creating content and programs, and now they're actually distributing it and syndicating it on Netflix. So now people can determine, well, why should I pay $100+ for a cable provider where I'm not looking at even 90% of those channels? I can get this device, plug it into my television, and watch what I want to watch and not have that large bill. And then secondly, was you would have thought maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago that you would have ever had the opportunity to have HBO a la carte just subscribe to just HBO without having it to be tied to an ad show cable provider. But HBO has recognized that people are changing their way of watch television, which is these new devices. So now you can a la carte subscribe to an HBO or Stars or Showtime, because now they're actually on these devices. So you can pay just $15 a month and have your HBO and not have to worry about paying $80, $90, $100-plus dollars to have all these other channels plus the HBO. So it's a game changer to the fact that now we're in control, and now that the mainstream is trying to fit into that game changer mode of how technology is really thriving. And even ABC and CBS are found on these same devices too, so they're looking at ways how to tap into this audience who aren't cool with cable anymore.
Okay,
so is there any commercials?
Sorry.
Nikki, what was your name?
Is there any commercials?
It depends. On some of them, like, for example, if you have, it all depends on that particular network on or that channel on that device. So, for example, on iDefiant TV, we're on Roku, we don't have any commercial. We may have a little bit of ad, like here, this is brought to you by, but it all depends on that particular channel. So, for example, it's a channel on there, they have movies, and I'm not going to say their name because they have some great documentaries, but you can't get past the commercials because they have more commercials than regular television. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is the purpose of having this. You're going to have a commercial every every 10 minutes there's a commercial. And I just couldn't get – it was a great documentary, but within 20 minutes I had, like, maybe 2 to 3 commercials. But then there's others that's like ourselves or any others, there aren't any commercials, or it may be just something more – and if they are commercials, they're more – specific. They're not just like, you know, random of the mill, like, you know, you have all these ads for drugs and medications on regular televisions and you just have a gamut. They want to get in and get out, so they don't get a quick 15-second commercial and then you back onto the program, and compared to having a 2 to 3 minute, you know, spot of just advertising. So it's not as much because people who are on these devices, they don't want that much advertising, but they're very mindful. It all depends on that actual channel or that network.
Okay.
Yeah, we definitely understand commercials here, Intuition 101. Did I mention this is BBS Radio? So, Georgia Southern University, so you got a degree in criminal justice. How did you make the leap from criminal justice to where you're at now?
To be honest, it's interesting because I've always been into forms of technology. I mean, years ago when computers came out, I was always there in front of the computer at the stores, and I was always wanting to do computers, but I was kind of timid when I got ready to go to high school and got ready to go to college because it was all about math, and math was not my forte. So I've always been in the mindset of creativity and technology, but at the same time, I also had an intriguing mind where I like to research, investigate, and determine how things come out. And not say per se crime, but just researching. So the next phase was, okay, between the two, I'm going to try pre-law criminal justice. And so that was the step to go into the criminal justice phase of it, mainly to do the researching and investigation. Never wanted to be an officer, never wanted to be paroled. I don't want to look my age, so I didn't want to get shot at. I didn't want to get beat down or anything. I just wanted to be in the back end, researching, analyzing, and things like that. And then, and as years went on, I really did a short stint of counseling at risk youth in North Carolina. And from there, I fell into telecommunications. I did that for many years, from wireless to voicemail development and all that kind of stuff. And then really around 2003, I decided to focus on what is my purpose. I wasn't feeling, you know, that sense of wanting to get to go to a job. What is my purpose? What is it that I want to do? And literally one Saturday, I woke up from a nap, and the story of my novel, which is titled Won't Be Denied, was in my head. The story, the title, the synopsis of the story, everything was all there. I was like, wow, that'd be a great movie, I thought to myself, you know. And I was telling a friend of mine, and she was like, oh, you got to write a book. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to write a book. But she said, oh, write a book. I said, it'd be a good movie. She said, write a book. So I wrote the book, and it was really really something worth doing because it got me outside of my comfort zone. It got me to do something different. And from there, it flourished into me creating a publishing company and learning how to publish the book and market the book. And that's how I got into the whole entrepreneur side of life, focusing on listening to my inner spirit, focusing on, okay, let me write this book. And it really was something that I really enjoyed doing. And then going from there, learning how to market and helping others how to market and taking all these different courses and workshops and events and things like that. So that's how it kind of snowballed. The thing is, taking one step at a time and listening, you never know where it will lead you, because if I never had taken the time to write the book, I would not have been here today and really stepping outside my comfort zone and not being, normally a shy person when I'm not in front of people I don't know, but it helped me to really hone on to what am I here for and still listening, what is my purpose and what I want to do in life.
I think that's awesome that you followed your intuition, especially as a woman, and that now you're this high, successful woman that you are for other ladies like myself to look up to. Now, your book is called Won't Be Denied. So it became like a mantra for many to take action in their life. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, some of those processes that, you know, you went through, or like little positive affirmations that you followed that helped you along to achieve these goals, even when you came to these challenges? And I also love the fact that you did heavy research. You know, you saw what you wanted, but you researched it first, all about marketing and how to conquer. You know, you didn't just like, I'm just going to go do this and then get discouraged. No, you really researched, studied it so that you had the best advantage.
Well, I mean, some parts of it, you know, when it came to, as I was moving forward, because of the fact that, like, for example, one of my, I guess my foundation or my friend, like I said, I'm an avid reader, but more so on the nonfiction side. So I'm more like I said, I'm a movie buff. I love film. I love movies. I like to hear the whole thing from beginning to end and production. So when I wrote it, I was writing more so trying to write it in that voice. So I had to go back and I let her read it. Oh, this is, and she was honest, oh, this is not good. So I had to go back and let me read some fiction books. And I found the voice and I found the cadence that I liked, which was Walter Mosley. He's a very good writer. I like how he moved compared to others that I read. And so when I was moving through it and focusing on it and listening to others and going to different events, like listening to like Les Brown or going to motivational events where you came across other different positive individuals, and really just taking a point of what is it that I want to achieve. Because initially, when I started writing the book, someone said, well, I said, I want to finish the book this year. And like, well, it normally takes maybe a year or two or 2 years to write a book. Well, they don't know. And the key thing is not listening to someone who has not done what you're attempting to do. You know, so I'm like, well, they don't know. They never wrote a book. So I was able to complete the book within like 4 to 6 months. Because I was really in it. Once I got into it, I had a system where I came in and I had turned off the television, no more television. I stopped looking at my favorite TV shows and I had to complete the task at hand. And on weekends, I would write longer, have my little tablet. And just moving forward and writing it, before I knew it, it was done. It was really not, I mean, I didn't intend to be that fast, but it was such a pleasure writing it. It was such a joy. And I think when you're doing something with pleasure, you don't mind it. It goes quicker than you think. And then
it just flows.
It did, and it was so much fun. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm driving in traffic, and all of a sudden you hit a character saying something. You're like, oh, let me pull out my pen and pad and write that down. I mean, before you know it, you're just having a heyday with writing these characters. And like, oh, and it's pretty much the book is about, it's like a version of Fatal Attraction. A young lady, she becomes obsessed with somebody. Little does he know that he's been obsessed about. And she's in awe with him, and her friends are recognizing her change, and she's going through these changes. She doesn't know why she's changing, but it's kind of like a little sort of a psychological thriller. And it became fun to say, okay, I can create a world that no one knows about, and then, you know, pull in people you kind of know. And I really, when I say research, most of everything in there I really visually saw as I drove through Atlanta. I didn't make up anything really other than the names and stuff, but it made it fun. And then as I stepped out, okay, now I hate reading in front of people, so I got to figure out how to market the darn thing, you know. So now, like, you know, again, it's like when you do something that's outside your comfort zone, it helps you develop another side of yourself that you think wasn't there, and you just continue to see it, you know, flow, and to me it makes you stronger. And every day, you know, and whatever you're doing, it could be everyday things in life, just stepping outside yourself and not doing what's in the box, but people have you in the box of this is how you're supposed to be or who you're supposed to be. But who are you supposed to be? What's your purpose? What is it I'm feeling? And it's an ongoing thing. I'm doing it every day. It's nothing perfect that I'm perfect at because of the fact that I'm constantly listening, like, am I selling in this box? Or is that even a box? Because I shouldn't be a box. I should keep moving forward and defining who I'm supposed to be, not because of my mother or father or family members or co-workers, whomever, but who I'm supposed to be. Because I think we get caught in a world of living a life of what's been put upon us, but not really what's inside of us.
Mm. Won't be denied. We're here with C.F. Jackson. We'll be right back after this break. Intuition 101, you're not politically correct radio, so we lay it all on the line for you. I'm Robert Bridges, co-hosting with my friend Nikki Love, and we're here talking to C.F. Jackson about her enterprise for entrepreneurs, iDefine TV. And so, C.F., we were just talking during the break about how you had real intuition, you had real discernment for what works for you. And you know, I see you're from St. Petersburg, Florida. Could you tell us a little bit about, like, what your upbringing was like, or what was it like coming up in St. Petersburg, and how did you end up in Georgia?
St. Petersburg, I liked it. I'm thankful and grateful to be in a place of growing up where it was a diverse place of growing up. As a child, you had the sun. There was always sun. Well, I said always, but 99.9 times out of 10, it was always sun. I was out. Of course, it rained here and there. I'm thankful and grateful to have grown up. I told someone some time ago, a couple weeks ago, that I wouldn't imagine being anywhere else because it's like suburban living. You know, it's like you're not familiar with St. Petersburg. It's right across the bridge from Tampa. Everyone's heard of Tampa. If not Tampa, you heard of Clearwater. So we're right in the midst of an essential part of Florida, and it was perfect. I mean, been to Disney World a gamut of times, been to Busch Gardens so many times, been to Adventure Island so many times. I never went to SeaWorld. It didn't have any rides. I just didn't know any better. But I could have gone to SeaWorld. But I went to all the themes, music parks that had all the rides and everything. And pretty much I grew up with a single mother. She did pretty good. She taught me young about the value of how to manage your finances. She's very firm. She taught me a lot about how to be respectful and all those things. And I had to, as a child, one of my things, I had to play music. So from fourth grade to high school, I had to play music. So I played the flute for 9 years. And those 9 years, I played the French horn. That was not an option because my mom, she sings. She's a performer herself. So that was something I had to do. So it taught me a lot, being in band, especially in marching band, about how to be a team player, how to be responsible, how to be held accountable for what you do, how to be a team and having high expectations of what you striving for when it comes to as a unit. Out of my 4 years in high school, I only missed one band practice, and that was because my mother forced me. And after that, she never forced me again because she put me in it. So I really enjoyed it once I got into it, very competitive program. So it was something. I wasn't the best student in high school. I was an average kid. But my grandmother, she became sick, and I really wanted to go to college specifically for her. I wanted to go to college to take care of her. That's the reason why I decided to go to college. And I initially went to school in Kentucky for 2 years. It was a challenge. I flunked out after my freshman year, and I went back to thrive and achieve it again. It was a challenge. So I came home, got my grades up, and I transferred to Georgia Southern University. Got on the good foot, as they say, and was thriving there after, on the road and all that good stuff, dean's list, and I was finally became a good student, and it was time to graduate. So that's how I made it in Georgia, but I really never wanted to be in Georgia. I was heading for D.C. But overall,
well,
it was...
Huh? Did I hear something about Kentucky, like UK?
No, I partied at UK, but the school in Georgetown College.
Okay, because I'm a Wildcats fan, so.
Oh, okay. No, I've been to Lexington many times. I've been to many clubs and many parties, but I went like 15 minutes, like north of there. It was Georgetown College. I went to school there for 2 years.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I'm glad that you got to experience, you know, Kentucky and all it has to offer, and, you know, have a good positive outlook on it.
I really. The funny part when I first went to school there is it was different. I mean, I didn't know about them young, but it was so weird because every time I would walk down the campus at 8 o'clock in the morning, everybody was so friendly. I think people in Florida was friendly, but they were friendlier. You know, good morning, good morning. I'm looking like, okay, it's 8 in the morning. They're trying to get to my class. Who are you? You know, but they're the friendliest people, giving people. I really enjoyed it. Made some great friends while I was there.
Yeah,
because I loved it.
Because they didn't want to end up like Poindexter. 35 years old in the IT department waiting for the look. But so I wanted to ask you, you said your mom was beneficial in your life, but so what's the story with your dad?
Oh, my dad, I didn't grow up with my father, but he was there, but he was not the one who raised me. So I have respect and, you know, for him. But the one who raised me and put down the law of the land was my mother. So he was there, but he was not, you know, that person who took care of me and paid bills and took care of all my wants and needs. That was my mother. But I did have respect for my father as whenever he called or came by, we spent time together. But my mother is the one who raised and took care of me and, you know, was there for me.
Okay, yeah, so that's pretty cool. So are you working on any newer novels, or how's your writing career picking up? Or I see you help entrepreneurs with your I-Define business. Do you help budding authors? Or what advice would you have for someone that's wanting to be a new author?
So the first question, so no, the initial book was mainly my goal with that book is really to turn it into a film. So that was that. I started a second book, and the chance that once you write the first book and you publish it and you got to push it out there as an independent is that you got to push that one and try to write another one. So it was kind of becoming a little challenging to write and market and push and all that good stuff. So, and then that was really wasn't the purpose of becoming an actual ongoing author. It was really just to get that out. And I think listening to the voice, it was mostly to get me outside my comfort zone to allow me to develop into different aspects. But in terms of helping others, in terms of writing, the key thing, I believe, is mainly focusing on just getting it out. Get the story out and not trying to be perfect at it. You know, get the story out, write it, know what you know what to do. The most important thing is getting pen to pad and writing out the story. And then once you get it all together, then sharing it with someone who you believe will be who's a good reader, who's an avid reader. You got to get somebody who reads like it's water. It's a must-have. And that my person, the friend who read it for me, she reads James Patterson. She reads all those books in a day. She thirsts. You know, it was like an easy read. So having that ability to have someone you can kind of bounce it off who's really a good reader and understand that genre. But what I do now in terms of as someone who's an author who has any media content that they want to distribute and reach another audience of people who are on television, we can take their trailer, we can take an interview that they may have, and we can actually syndicate that and distribute it on iDefine TV on one of our channels. We have anything from iDefine Film, we have our business, health and wellness, we have entertainment, comedy, we have a plethora of different channels within our actual iDefine. We can take that video and broadcast it to our actual audience and drive them back to the actual entrepreneur or author to get them to know more about what they do and how to order their products or services and expand their reach.
Now, without giving away the secret, go ahead, Nikki.
And I was just going to say, I can't wait to see her first novel out in like Lifetime or something. You know, sounds like it'd be a good one. But you also, you know, you talk about, you know, consulting others and how to discover your talent and realizing their business goals. Like, how do you do that? Like, what are some of the steps and process to do so? Like, how do you help one realize their true talents and how to achieve their business goals?
Well, key is, like you were saying earlier, when it comes to relationships, is listening, communicating. So for me, it's like pretty much listening to someone as they're sharing what they're doing, what their goals are, and again, exploring what their purpose is and what they're striving to do, and providing different resources and tools and strategies along the way that they can implement to bring that into fruition or to improve upon what they're already doing. And mainly, for example, I have someone there working on something and they ask a question or, what do you think about this or that? And then we're brainstorming, having that great, key thing is having someone who you consult with is having a great brainstorming partner. That's what I do well is brainstorming and seeing what is it you're saying, what are you pressing upon, what are you wanting to accomplish, and come up with some ideas, some steps, some strategies. And it's up to the individual to move forward in that. If they do, that's great. If they don't, then shame on them. But my goal is to how can I listen to you very closely and very attentively and provide some type of guidance along the way to help you, something that you never thought about or didn't even think about. And then maybe sometimes there's many of the people in this world, we don't all have that resource. So if I can bring a resource that you never thought about, didn't know about, that's even better, because now you have a resource that you didn't have. You don't need to take time to find it because I already had that resource, and vice versa.
That's awesome.
Why do I need a consultant? Like, you know, I look through these business blogs and on these, you know, video websites or whatnot, and I see them saying, like, you know, get a partner, get a life coach, or this and that and other. And I just wonder, like, why can't I just think really hard? Like, what can a consultant do for me that I can't do for myself?
Like, it's the same question is, what can the gas station do for you that you can't do for yourself? I mean, you can try to make some gas and create the whole, you know, petroleum and all that. How long would it take you to make some petroleum? Maybe some a long time. Why not get somebody who already has the petroleum and get you to point B quicker than you would do it yourself? So it's having someone along the way who already has the knowledge or knows something that you don't know, who can put you in place with somebody else to get you there faster. That's the whole purpose of having a consultant, having someone, a partner. I mean, this reason why you have Nikki to bounce off things. She has her skill set, you have your skill set. You bring it together, you know, you're a better powerhouse. It's like having a relationship. You can be alone, you can have a partner, but that having the right partner that you want to marry and be with, someone who's going to be A and B, put it together, you're a powerhouse. You don't have two stagnant people, then you don't have a boring relationship. But you want to have two people that's going to add to the yin and the yang and make you a stronger person, not only as a couple but as an individual. And it's the same thing in business. You want to have someone that you can bounce off something and bring and make you a better person in terms of your business, maybe in relationship, maybe in your job, maybe whatever it is. Somebody else is always good to have someone you can rely upon or call upon to help you along the way. Because if you try to do it yourself really hard, you waste time. You can waste a lot of time.
Now, when I go on Google, I see, and I type in business consultant, I get 15 million results. How do I know who's really a real business consultant, who's the right business consultant, and who's just trying to scam for money?
Well, to be honest, you really have to, like anything else, you're hiring them because they're going to ask for money. So you got to interview. So, for example, if there's a consultant, you have the top five, you feel, okay, they're saying some things that I like. If they have events, I would say the best way is first date them, quote, unquote. If they're having some type of speaking events that you can go to their events that they're the speaker. If they're having some may be free, some may cost. But at least you can initially go and see how they are in terms of how they and introduce yourself and see if you gel with them a couple of times. Sometimes if you can do that, some may be out of state, but you can still initially get a conversation with them and talk with them to see how you feel. Like when I first got my CPA, I actually took the time to interview. So I said, okay, let me call this person. And they always say, ask somebody who has more money than you. Let's try to get a CPA. So I said, let me ask people who I know who earn a whole lot more money than I have. So I asked those who have a whole lot more money than I have. I interviewed their CPAs. Then I went with this one lady. I asked the same questions. I did not understand what she was saying. So she was above my head. So I scrapped her. Second lady I interviewed, talked to her. She was cool. And she's still my CPA, like, what, 15 years later? Long time. She was good. So you interview people. You could take time to interview them. You ask questions. You see how you go with your intuition and see how you feel about it. You can always switch and change if it don't work out right.
So do your research. Don't go heads on, you know. Just take your time. Be a little cautious.
Wow, that's amazing, Sia. So, without, I don't know if I asked you this because you just blow my mind, but without giving away the secret sauce, mm-hmm. What made you look at Roku and decide, you know what, I could get on there. I can start a channel. And again, we don't want you to give away the kitchen sink, but how did you get that line of thinking, and even the writing a novel, like, what is it, or what was the defining moment in your life where you said, I'm not going to be held back, I'm not going to be limited? Was it a breakup? Was it a disappointment? Was it, you know, losing a position in band? What was it? What fuels you? Why are you C.F. Jackson and not someone else? What makes you you?
That's a good question, Robert. That's a good question. That's a good one. I would say initially, my push has always been my grandmother, and she has since passed when I was actually in college. So I had to complete that, even though I was going for her, and she passed during my sophomore year. That was not a choice of not to complete my degree. But I think what's made me is to, I'm a questions person. I'm always questioning. It goes back to my degree. I like to analyze and interpret. And it made me unique than other people is that I'm very observant, and at the same time, I want to question, not because I'm judging, but I'm wondering why is this and how is that. So with the book in 2003, I started the year off in 2003 as what is my purpose. I always ask people the whole 2003 and then some, what's the purpose of that? And so as I'm moving forward, that's the reason the book came about. I was like, what is the purpose? And then there it was. Let me write this book. As for the Roku, somebody was telling me about the actual Roku, and I had never heard about the device. So I went, of course, I'm researching. I did my research. I'm like, I'm getting the Sony one. There's Sony's, a whole bunch out there. So I'm getting the Sony because the Sony does X, Y, and Z. It has a lot more features and benefits. Let me get this one. And I loved it. But then someone had came to me, I'm thinking to myself, well, how do we get on this thing and say, oh, you know, Roku does this. I'm like, well, let me go buy the Roku. I refer to Sony one, but the Roku is the one that leads because they created the whole platform. And so I'm like, okay, how do I go about getting it, doing the research, coming up with a partner, I got a developer, and moving from there. And then my thought, because I initially got on it because I thought, how can I continue to help those who are entrepreneurs, small business owners, spend themselves, because at the end of the day, the average American spends somewhere between 4 or 5 hours on television. Television isn't going anywhere. They're getting bigger, they're getting slimmer, they're getting smarter. So this is the next phase. Now, even though it's a big market, it's still small, people still don't recognize that they're even out there. That's how big, it says how small it is, but yet it's big, because Roku could be seen throughout the United States, Canada, UK, South America. We even have viewers as far as Japan. So it's a platform that I want to help people understand that you don't have to be a mogul of someone with $1 billion in the bank. You can be someone with several thousand and have your own actual network on this device, have your own sponsors and advertisers, and have your own version of ABC or HBO or Cinemax, whatever you want to call it, if you're sports, ESPN, and make your own platform and brand. So it's pretty much asking questions, and I'm always tinkering and clinking at things of how can I do it and make it work for me.
That's like raw material.
Is that Nikki?
Roku. Roku's like raw material, like underground world, like that's how I look at it. Like
you want
the real experience. Yeah, like you're going to get real people, you know, doing their thing. Nobody's controlling it. I mean, not to the full max, you know, that can really put out what they want. People love that. People like real. So I like that.
Yep. Good wording. Yeah.
So are you suggesting that other people do what you did? Because we don't hear that a lot. you know, that people have enough confidence in themselves that they say, hey, follow my footsteps. It worked for me. You should try it too. That sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, to
that sounds like that's what you've been saying throughout this whole call. I hate to cut you off, but it sounds like that's what you've been saying throughout this whole call. Like, hey, look, this works for me. Like, try this, do this. And you know what? I think we need more people in this world that have that type of light. And that's something that I appreciate as I've been listening to this call, is just saying, like, look, it sounds to me like you're saying, like, look, this is just a stopping point for me. So, like, if you want to stop here too and, like, you know, share some space with me while I'm on my way to the next plane, that's cool. You know, and I think that that's something unique about you, and I think that that's something that's going to cause you to be very successful as you go forward, that a lot of people need to copy from your playbook on that one.
Well, thank you.
What I got out of it is I feel like you're going for what you love. You're not doing any of this for money or anything else, and that's why it's going so well. So it's like really taught me or showed me, hey, do what you love. You know, get into it. If you love it, it's just going to flow, and it's just going to go up.
Wow. I like both the answers, and I agree with both of them. Yes, I agree with the going and sharing, because for a minute I was like, okay, everybody needs to be on iDefined TV. But then I said, well, if we can help develop and design and manage others to have their own, why not do that for other people? I mean, others have bigger platforms and brands than what I have, and there's a football league who we're looking to work with them and help them along the way, you know. So, and again, having fun and helping people along the way, being creative, is a great way to do it. So I agree with both of you. Thank you so much for giving your feedback. I greatly appreciate that.
Well, after this radio broadcast, I guarantee you how to get a Roku channel is going to be trending on Google, because you made that quite appealing, and you really got it figured out. But I think the main thing that people need to realize before they go to do anything is the amount of determination that you've had to have, the amount of sweat. I mean, coming from not knowing what the product is, pushing it forward no matter what, especially writing a book, you know, knowing that, I mean, let's be real, the odds are against you. I mean, there's so many books out here, but continuing to have that dedication, but not just, you know, having the dedication in the moment, but having that dedication for the long run, even when you hit the wall. You know, I think that's what the book shows to me. That's what this shows to me. And that's what I want the callers to kind of take away from this, is that, you know, it's not going to be an easy road. And as Nikki said, it's not about money either, but it's about letting your passion and your energy and your light flow. Did you have any closing thoughts, Nikki?
I just love how, you know, you see up as a person, not only with your intuition, but also not only for your love for what you're doing, but the love to help others. And I think because that's coming from such a loving place within you, that I'm just wishing you all the best in the world.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, this has been another episode of Intuition 101 with Nikki Love. This is your co-host, Robert Bridges, and we've had C.F. Jackson, our wonderful guest. We wish you the best, love, light, and success. Have a great night, and get out there and work hard.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.